she's real fine, my 409.
This is the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by Autoflex Leasing on 105.3 The Fan.
Good morning.
A civil hello. I'm Mike Dingus, joined by my wonderful host, Tammy Pickard, David Blass, and Game of Autoflex Leasing, and I'm excited to be here with you guys this morning.
We do appreciate being here, definitely, and go Cowboys and go Rangers!
Rangers' big win last night.
Woohoo!
And we got a lot of stuff coming up on the show today, and we'll start right away. David, you got seven things your body shop won't tell you, car insurance miss, traders sell it. I can't wait to get into all this stuff. And then I've got, like, my favorite tease ever. You wrote it out for me, but I can't tease it until, like, 9:41. So I'm good to go there.
Yeah, you know what? We've always been sort of consumer-related, and I've got a dead mic. Hold on.
That's right. This is live radio, everybody. What we're going to be talking about is body shops, okay? They don't always tell you what you need to know because they're very driven for their own business. So they won't tell you that a fender bender will be a major expense. If that accident is your fault and you have the typical $500 deductible that I have for a collision, kiss that money goodbye. You can't save the deductible when it's your fault. So definitely drive safe and make sure it's somebody else's fault. Number two, approved shops are beholden to tight-fisted insurers. All right, so you need to know that auto insurers contract with providers to repair vehicles for a pre-negotiated rate. You need to think of this as like managed care for sick cars, very similar to, you know, our health care. And your car could be the victim of cost cutting, right? So think about that. Get a couple of different opinions. Not all replacement parts are created equal. That's the third thing they won't tell you. Okay? Original equipment manufacturer, or OEM parts. Now you all know what OEM means. Original equipment manufacturer. They're designed to match precisely and could be safer for you. Okay, but insurers prefer that shops use generic or salvage replacement parts because they're cheaper.
Exactly.
How do you get around fixing that? So if I have a big car issue, I just got my Civic. It just became my Civic, and which means I'm probably about 4 months away from contacting you guys and switching to something else.
Oh no.
But well, that's no problem. That's what happens when you get it. Like when you finally pay off it, like a 6-year lease for me. When I finally pay it off, the car's got 170,000 miles, and I don't know. I could probably push it to 250, but I'm paying a lot. But I've had to pay for significant repairs in my Civic.
And that's what makes people trade. When it starts costing them money, then they go, you know, I'm spending money now. I could get a new car, and I wouldn't spend any more money. And then I wouldn't have to worry about the air conditioning, the tires, the water pump, the alternator, all that stuff you got to worry about. So that is what makes people trade, is when they have to start spending money. Now, when your car is in the body shop, the other thing you need to remember is that if you have to rent a car, it will cost you money. In fact, if you have to rent a car for like 2 or 3 weeks, you'll spend $1,000 on a rental car. Here's the good news. Rental car reimbursement is one of the least expensive pieces of insurance you can buy. It'll cost you $1 or $2 a month for rental car reimbursement. The other thing is when you get rental car reimbursement, ask them about upgrading it in case you don't want to drive a smart car.
Yes.
Because they're going to put you in a little bitty tiny car and say, here's what your insurance pays for. You can, in fact, get insurance, again, terribly inexpensively, that will cover more than just a tiny little compact.
Also, they won't tell you the due date is most likely fiction. You know, they'll tell you, oh, we'll have that fixed in a few weeks. Take the typical hailstorm issue, for example. They'll tell you it'll be just a couple weeks, and they'll take your car in, and then it's trapped.
Forever.
Because they took everybody's car that got held on in, because you're not going to turn business away. They'll just go somewhere else. And then there it is, trapped in the shop. Well, we're waiting for the paint. We're waiting for this. We're waiting for something else from the insurance.
It's sort of like hiring a contractor to do work at your house. You have to know that he's got 4 other jobs going at the same time, and he's anxious to get started on you. But once you're started, you're his.
Once he has your 50%.
Yeah, so when you put your car in the shop, it really works the same way. So most, and they always blame it on parts, it seems.
Yeah,
oh, the parts are, the parts, they're shipping the parts from Afghanistan, you know. So.
Well, be prepared, though, if you've got a Volkswagen or something like that, because the part is coming
from Germany.
From over the seas.
Yeah. And the other thing is, if you're driving a European car, don't just put it in any shop. because some shops do better with European cars than others. Here's why. They use HSLA steel. They require special equipment. Sometimes they have aluminum panels. And all shops are not equipped to handle those kind of repairs. So you got to sort of make sure that the shop you put your car in speaks its language.
So the insurer's warranty isn't all it's cracked up to be. That's another thing they'll tell you. That means the insurer's warranty. So if you have State Farm, Allstate, Geico, whoever, their guarantee, their warranty on the work that the body shop does is not always that it's cracked up to be. You need to find out what the body shop's guarantee is.
Well, and that's the other thing. Even though your insurance company says, if you take this car to the shop, this shop, we will warranty the business, one of the reasons they want you to go to their preferred shop is they've got a deal. They've got a side deal. So the shop agrees to maybe not use OEM parts, to maybe use other
salvage
parts.
Or secondhand. Or
secondhand parts. They've got a deal on labor. Maybe you could replace the quarter panel, but you could also straighten it, and it would cost the insurance company less money. So they'll choose to straighten your quarter panel. So when your insurance company directs you and says, look, this is our shop, well, it is. They sort of own them. Now, in Texas, it's not legal for them to actually own them, but they sort of own them. It's better to take a shop, take a car, your car, to a shop that you're comfortable with rather than your insurance company. Your insurance company is obligated to repair your car wherever you put it.
I love where you went with that, because you talk about a shop that you're comfortable with, and that's my favorite. Like, when it comes to myself, when I'm getting my car repaired or taking it in, I've gone so many different places because I've yet to find one place that just blew me away that said, that made me think, I'm going here forever. But I feel like the two of you are the kind of people that have picked your shop. You know where you're going with your car because you found people that you trust. Like, when you're looking at, like, whenever everyone feels the same, a lot of people I'm sure feel the same way I do. They just don't know who to trust when it comes to the body shop business in terms of, like, getting your car repaired. What are you looking for in terms of where you want to take your cars?
Exactly. Well, and we actually recommend shops because we have used shops for years that we know they're honest and they're going to take care of our customers.
But only to our customers who get cars from us.
Yeah.
So you got it somewhere else. Just don't even call me.
No,
I'm kidding. We actually had a texter text in years ago because we were talking about a similar subject, and they needed some help on a BMW. Even the BMW dealer couldn't quite get this deal handled. And my shop doesn't work on German cars. I guess that'll keep me out of a German car because I like my guy. But he had a buddy within the same area. He said, they're great. The shop's not that impressive. It's not a dealership shop. I mean, it's a mechanic, okay? He said, it's not impressive, but they do great work. They're really honest. And this fellow texted me back or emailed me back later on and said, they did great for him. They worked really hard and fixed the car for just a percentage of what he'd been told it would take.
Well, and to what you said, Mike, I mean, if you know the guy that runs the shop, that owns the shop, he'll be honest with you like Jim was with Tammy and said, look, I don't fix German cars. That's not my deal. I do this. If he's honest with you like that, you know he's an honest guy. And he directed her customer to some place that could take care of it. And that's important. I mean, you're always looking for someone you can trust, whether you're getting a car or getting a car fixed.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and that just kind of feeds over into how we even do our business. Because we do handle leases and loans and new and pre-owned and flex buys, and people can get confused about all of their options that are out there. A lot of people just get drawn in by advertising, but they don't know all the, you know, fine print. They don't know all those details. And they may not know really that the lease isn't better for them. Or basically I want to own my car, but they're trading it either as soon as it's paid off or right before it's paid off. So they're doing what lessees do, but they're paying a lot more money and they're exposing themselves to a lot more possible financial loss because it's an ownership.
And without giving away your location specifically, and if you want to be a customer, of course, of Autoflex Leasing, reach out to them, 817-0972-234-1234. Like, is it more of a national chain type thing, or do you find that your individual mechanic shops or your privately owned shops seem to be the way to go? Or is it kind of like a crapshoot?
Okay, first of all, it's according to what kind of car you have. Because if you've got a Mercedes, Lexus, BMW, and it's fairly new, then you want to go back to the manufacturer every single time. As that car gets older, you want to find someone you can trust and not have to pay the flat rate that the manufacturer charges, or the markup on the parts that they charge at the factory locations. So it's just according to the car and how old it is and that kind of thing. But there's always good people out there that do what you need. You just got to help find them. I have, you know, the online groups that talk about their cars, the focus group, the online, whatever they call them.
The chat rooms and so forth, the bloggers.
You can find good stuff there because the guys that are getting their work, they'll talk about everything that happens, good, bad, or indifferent.
And go on the internet to Dealer Raider and Google Raider and Yelp and all those places to get a little feedback on a place that you might want to try out. Another thing to consider, and this is a little off the topic, but after speaking to a client yesterday who told me her daughter went out and got a car, she said, you know, she's really independent. She didn't ask first, and I didn't ask her how much she paid for it, but she went from a little Kia to a Mercedes. And prior to that, she said,
nice upgrade.
Yeah, and her husband had had a Volvo before, and they said they weren't going to get a car like that again because it was so expensive to repair. And I kind of choked a little bit. I said, well, she didn't investigate how expensive it is to repair a Mercedes either, because if the car is $60,000 new, there's a reason. The parts were expensive. So if you have to replace one of those later, they're on the higher side. You know, it's not a Honda part. It's a Mercedes part.
One little bit of advice, by the way. If you cannot afford a new Mercedes, you probably can't afford one that's 4 or 5 years old. Because when it breaks, you're going to find out exactly what Tammy says.
Well, all I asked her, I said, just make sure she got an extended service agreement.
Exactly.
That way she'll have some extra peace of mind and coverage. I believe in those if you're going to keep the car long term, because once it's out of the factory warranty, I don't want to pay $140 an hour.
Which is when most of the problems occur anyway.
There's a reason. There's an end to that warranty period. So right. Pretty good there, Dingus.
The other thing is when you see a car advertised and they have a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty, it means they're not selling enough cars. That's a very, very expensive way for a manufacturer to help push their cars. They'd rather do it a lot of other ways. When all else fails, they extend the warranty and they go, and that's because we've got such a great car. No, it's because people understand they're going to save a lot of money. I mean, that's the bottom line.
And I wonder when they do that, is that some of the manufacturers, it's only to the first owner, and other manufacturers, it transfers on.
Exactly.
So that's another thing. They're hedging their bet if it's only to the first owner that you won't keep it for 10 years, 100,000 miles. So.
All right. It's up to you guys what we do here. I can tease the next one. We didn't get into the car insurance myth or the trade it or sell it. So we can... Where do you want to go next? Because I got that one, and then you have the J.D. Power rankings ranking the most appealing luxury brands.
Okay, so let's tease it, and we'll come back after the break.
I want to talk about the Bachelorette.
Stop it.
Kidding.
Bachelorette next. And we'll also talk about J.D. Power ranking the most appealing luxury brands. Should you buy your leased car in Takata Sek's campaign to alert drivers? Takata Sek's campaign to alert drivers.
That's the airbag company.
I'm excited about that one. We'll find out what happens. That's next on Saturday Morning Test Drive, 105.3 The Fan.
We're back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by Autoflex Leasing. Well, I'm
not bragging. Saturday Morning Test Drive, Mike Dingus with David Blassingame and Tammy Pickard, along with our wonderful producer, J.P. Stingley, at J.P. Sting on Twitter, a.k.a. Snuggles.
Bam.
Oh, you did it.
I had to do it, man. I'm here for Sybil, the great Sybil, who will be back next Saturday, I'm assuming. Sybil's back with us.
We sure hope
Saturday.
So.
If she's not, then I'll be back next Saturday, and Sybil just got Wally Pipped, and that's what happens. That's not a bad Wally Pipped joke right there. All right, so you wanted to get into millennials, which I learned what a millennial was just a second ago. You said millennials are accounting for 30% of auto leases. Is this across the world or across the country?
Across the country.
Okay. And then I found out what a millennial was because I asked you guys what a millennial was, and to help the fans out and Autoplex Leasing fans out there, what is a millennial?
Well, it's basically Gen Y, and there aren't any precise dates, but it's basically anybody born from the early 80s to the early 2000s.
That's me.
There you go. You're a
exactly.
Gen Y, a millennial.
I was born in flat out 80.
Okay.
Flat out 80.
Okay, so no one really in the business, no one really knew this was going on, and finally – Edmunds.com did a survey, and they found out that millennials lease cars at a higher rate than any other group, age group of people in the United States. It's completely crazy. Almost 30% of the total lease volume is from millennials, and here's why.
I know why.
Okay, why?
Well, I'll give you my opinion why,
okay.
And then you can tell me what the reality is. They want to get more for their money. You know, I think we've that age group, they see everything that their parents have, and they want to slide right into that situation. And they also know that over time, they're going to earn more money. So if you get out of college and you start, or you're not even going to college, but you're in that age, you start at the one income, let's say $25,000 a year, you plan to increase your income over time. So you don't want to be stuck with that car that you could afford when you first got out of college, first started working. You want to be able to trade up, right, Dave?
Yeah, because 4 or 5 years later, you can afford more cars. So here's what they've discovered. The average millennial can afford to pay about $299 a month right out of school, and they can afford about $300 a month. Well, if they buy a car, they're stuck with a car that costs no more than $20,000, which is not a lot of car. But if they lease that car, they can get a car that's $33,000 to $35,000, and they want more for their money, just like everyone does. So that is driving the millennials to lease cars. It's a really interesting phenomena because, and the story I'm going to follow up with is even crazier, but it's an interesting phenomena because no one had any idea. Everyone thought that they're living at home and they don't have any money and they've got college debt. Well, some of that's true, but they're leasing cars like wildfire because they get more for their money. They don't have a lot, but like Tammy says, they know they're going to have more. You know?
And they wanted that flexibility of being able to just shuck that car, not worry about the loss of value or whatever, and just bump right into the next one.
It makes all the sense in the world because I've reached that point myself where 10 years ago what I had, like I can just get more now and I want more. And I got 6 years ago when I signed my loan, whatever, that I just paid off 4 days ago. Like I could, that was the car I could afford. Now that I've done that, I've made a little bit more money. Now I want a new car. I want something nicer. I've always wanted a Jeep. That's the car I want.
Yeah.
A really nice Jeep, which I haven't, is that a good thing to look for?
Because
from what I understand, like I've heard Jeeps aren't the best possible cars to get.
Depends on which one, really.
Yeah, it
really
does. And here's the thing.
A really nice one, Tammy.
Do you want a Wrangler or do you want a Grand Cherokee?
Wrangler.
Okay. Now. That's a whole different ballgame because those cars have fabulous resale value and they're very reliable. So, you know, there's nothing, I mean, Wranglers are great other than the ride. If you're looking for a super cushy ride,
I can enjoy the choppiness.
All
right with that.
Then you're going to love that deal. And the other thing is, now according to how many miles you drive, if you're driving 30,000 miles a year, you're going to want to pick up a 1 or 2 year old Wrangler that somebody else has taken the big hit on that doesn't have a whole lot of miles on it. And that's going to be a great car for you. If you're driving 15,000 miles a year, you may want to look at leasing that Wrangler because they've got great resale value. One way or another, it's a good choice.
Mm-hmm. They're very popular.
Okay, so
we can't keep them.
We know that millennials are leasing about 30% of all the leases that are done in America right now. Here's the other thing that's a huge change, and that is that American highways are going gray. People that are 65 years old and older are the folks that are buying and leasing all the cars now in huge numbers. Here's why.
They got the money.
They got the money. They save their money. They're retired. And they like nice cars. They are the car generation. The baby boomers, they're car people. You know, they all grew up when muscle cars were the big thing and the Mustang and the Camaro came out and all of that. You know, the Chevelle Super Sports. And so what you find is all of these guys that are 65 years old and their dream car, it's not a Buick. It's a Corvette. That's what they want to drive, and they can afford the payments on it. Now, the other thing is a lot of those folks lease because the payments are less. Nice car, payments are really less than if you buy the car. We do, though, run onto our customers. I've had a customer tell me a couple of weeks ago, I'm going to go ahead and buy this next car. And I said, well, okay, why? And they said, because probably I won't be buying another one. I'm 74. And it's a real thing. Here's the other thing. An 85-year-old customer is not worth as much as a 35-year-old customer to a manufacturer. So the manufacturer is trying to hook people up when they're young and go, you know, let's get them into a Ford while they're young, and they'll love Ford the entire time. My family growing up was a GM family. We always drove GM cars. But the 85-year-olds, it's a real tough thing for manufacturers on the advertising side to, how much money do we spend? Have you seen the Volkswagen commercial with the ladies that are all 65 plus? Sure.
The senior ladies?
Yes. That's aimed at that demographic. You're starting to see those ads, something you never saw before. So the graying of the America highway is taking place.
Well, let me tell you I just want to inject a little opinion about why also, because this is something I'm addressing with my own parents. They need the extra safety features. not necessarily technology to touch buttons and so forth because they want to focus on the road, but you know what I'm going to add to my parents' current car? Backup sensors that beep. Because I noticed the other day they had a little scrape on the bumper. I was like, where'd that come from? Well, we were da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I went, okay.
It's like the old Seinfeld joke. I was watching Seinfeld stand-up. I just happened to watch it last week, and he's like, when people just, they reach a certain age where when they're backing out of the driveway, they're just, I'm old, and I'm coming back.
Exactly. Okay. And when I hit something, that's when I'm going to stop.
So that's the other thing. Cars are becoming more friendly to the older driver. Lane departure warning.
Yes.
Backup cameras. Mm-hmm. Backup warning sensors.
The automatic braking system to keep you from hitting somebody.
Okay, so if you
those things are awesome.
If you have automatic braking, you probably don't drive through the front of the 7-Eleven because you put the car in drive rather than reverse. Right?
Yep. No.
You know?
All right, but we do love our senior clients and the seniors that make America run and made America great like it is today. But anyway, think about upgrading. If you don't have a backup camera, that is the bomb. You need to get it. And you can add or at least backup sensors that beep. If you can't put the camera in, but you can add a camera or you can just add sensors.
Autoflex Leasing fan texts are starting to roll in now. Sybil, thank you very much. We appreciate it. We miss you too.
Sybil texted in.
Yep. How do you get around your insurance company or your shop using salvage or non-OEM parts? When you buy your insurance, talk to who you're buying your insurance from. And different companies charge more for insurance. You can go online and you can get insurance so cheap it is crazy. But when it comes time to pay a claim, then it becomes a battle.
You get what you pay for, people.
Exactly. So cheapest is not always best. When you buy the insurance, talk to your insurance guy about will you use OEM parts? Are you going to put salvage or used parts on my car? Because you can specify and work with and find out what his company does. If they don't do what you need, you can change companies.
And if you don't really care, then just go for the cheapest. But later you might find you care.
Yeah.
For sure.
You see all these ads. It's like any other kind of ad you see. You see ads every day where you can lease a $40,000 car for $199 a month. Well, you can, but it costs $8,000 to do it up front. So insurance is the same way. You see these ads, you can get the cheapest insurance. You can get this, but they don't pay claims.
Just find out what you're getting for sure.
If it's an uphill battle to get your
insurance
claim paid.
Insurance is opposite. You pay that money. Like instead of paying the $8,000 up front, you pay the $8,000 when something happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So, Autoflex Leasing Fantex, didn't buy a car from a dealer but purchased an extended warranty. Do I go to the dealer for repairs? Are they covered under the warranty? In most cases, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you don't have to. One of my friends got a pre-owned Mercedes from me. We put an extended service agreement on it. She had a shop that their family had used for many, many years, not unlike our guy Jim. And so she took the car in there. He goes, well, you know, I don't know about this warranty. They never pay anything. And she said, well, I got this from my friend, so could you please just check? And he called her back a couple hours later and said, well, you got a good one. They're going to pay. And so you might.
How did he say it again?
It was, that's, you know, I wasn't on the phone call, but that's kind of how she relayed the story to me. They live out there in Louisville.
Gotcha. Autoflex Leasing Fan Text, if you drive 40,000 miles a year, should you lease? Great question, but it has a whole bunch of different facets to it. It's according to whether you have business usage. It's according to whether you're just going to drive 40,000 miles a year. And if you're going to drive 40,000 miles a year and you shouldn't lease, there's a whole nother conversation you should have about the way to do it to cost you the least money because you're going to spend you're going to depreciate a car really quickly at $40,000 a year.
Right.
And the type of car you get is going to be really, really important.
So that's a good question that should be taken over by one of our specialists because the people that work at Autoflex practically have a PhD in everything from the type of car to how you should finance it, and they can guide you.
See, like for me, I would have, because I do about 20 a year. And I've honestly thought about like reaching out to you guys now that I have my car. I'll wait a little bit longer, but like for me it's 20 a year, and I don't know. I'm sure that's inside that. Like ideally, like Dave was talking earlier, if you write $15,000 a year, if that's your average, that's the perfect average for someone that wants to lease a car because that's just average wear and tear on a car. $40,000, that's 120,000 miles after 3 years. So right. If you lease it for 3 years, you talk about really depreciating a car. You couldn't be like more correct on that. So if I'm 20 a year, which seems to be probably average for people in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
15 to 20.
Yeah,
yep.
Like that's the ballpark where, for me, leasing would make sense.
It does, because you are still depreciating the car pretty rapidly. And here's the deal. When it comes to selling a high-mileage car, don't just sit by that phone waiting for it to ring. Because nobody calls our office looking for a high-mileage car. And especially they don't look for one that's been
with about 150 or more on it.
Right.
Yeah. Really looking for.
No,
never
happens. You know what the key number is? 50,000 miles.
Yeah.
If it's 50,000
miles,
it changes everything.
Yeah. Yep. And depending on the age of the car. Now, when it's a 1 or 2 year old car, they want it to have under 20,000 miles.
That makes sense, because if you look at 100,000 miles as the time when cars start to wear and tear down, if you get it at 50 already, you're looking at least, what, 3 years of good value, good usage out of that car still. And it makes sense. If it's at 65 plus, then you're 2 years in, you're sitting there and you're already at that point where you're having to maybe take care of some big repairs.
Exactly.
But if you are a low mileage driver yourself, let's say you don't put more than 5,000-8,000 miles a year on your car. There are plenty of people out there like that. You can save a lot by going for that higher mileage car, because you're not going to hit 100,000 miles in 3 years. You're going to add very few miles to it once you get it. So that's a great way for you to save money. These are the kinds of, you know, this is the type of help we're going to give you. When you call and say, this is my budget, how many miles a year do you drive? We tell you, and you're stuck on getting a car under 20,000 miles, we can help you save by saying, you know, really look at it this way.
Okay, so if you're driving 40,000 miles a year, I'm going to ask that you call either 817 or 972-234-1234 and pose that question to one of our leasing specialists, and they'll be able to work through whether you should lease a new one, whether you should buy a pre-owned, maybe a 1 or 2 year old pre-owned, maybe a really low mile pre-owned, so that you can. And the other thing is the kind of car you get, because if you're going to drive a zillion miles, you better get the right car, because some cars will drive 250,000 miles and you really will not ever have big problems with them at all. And some cars at 100 grand, you're pretty well done. You're
right.
Spending money.
Hey, listen, you don't have to just call our office either. You can also go online to autoflex.com and submit an inquiry through the internet, and then we can call you that way. It wouldn't be a bad idea when you do contact us to kind of give us an idea of what you're trying to accomplish, because we'd like to connect you with the correct specialist to help you. We call our employees specialists because they specialize in different things. Some of them I call a triple threat. You know, they can dance, sing, and act. Others really focus in certain areas. So if you tell us what you need, we'll connect you with the pro that will help you accomplish exactly what you want.
Top 10 automotive failures of the last decade, and should you trade it or sell it? Next on the Saturday morning test drive, 105.3 The Fan.
We're back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing.
Saturday Morning Test Drive. I'm Mike Dingus, joined by David Blassingame and Tammy Pickert, hosted or produced by the great at JP Sting on Twitter, JP Stingley in real life. And
if you want me to host, let me know.
Snuggles, according to Sybil, who really appreciates that I continue to call you Snuggles. That will stop at 10 o'clock, by the way, just so you know.
Please.
You'll stop being Snuggles and you'll start being something that's inappropriate.
Okay, whatever you say.
David, I teased top 10 automotive failures of last decade, and should you trade it or sell it? What direction would you like to head in here?
Well, let's do the top 10 failures, because, you know, every once in a while, they build cars that just don't make it. They just don't sell enough cars. Now, here's the other thing.
Is this failures in terms of they just didn't move like they wanted them to move, or failures and it just wasn't the car that you like they were proclaiming it to be?
The big failure in the car business is when something doesn't sell. Everything is about selling. When you see them stop making a vehicle, it's because it stops selling. Has nothing to do with anything else. It's a money business. So here are the top 10 mistakes of the last decade.
And there's not one I disagree with.
No, that's why, yeah. Number 10, the Honda Insight. Since 2003, they sold 67,128 of these. That means they sold 6,700 a year across the United States.
Not enough.
That's divided by 50. That's divided by 12 months. Yeah, not enough.
It's an unattractive car, David. That's why you didn't sell it.
It is.
It's like a mini station wagon.
It is. And you know, it was a wonderful concept. And when they first came out, they sold a few of them. But, boy, that dropped off. All right, number 9, the Ford Thunderbird. That was the retro-looking early 2000s Ford Thunderbird. They built it between 2002 and 2006. They sold a total of 59,200 of them. That's 14,000 cars a year. You can't build a car and make money on it if you're only selling 14,000 cars a year.
It was too expensive.
Okay, I was going to say, because this one's visually appealing.
Yes, yep. It was too expensive for the people who would buy it.
Exactly.
Because the people who were kind of enamored by it that could afford it were the older generation, probably the baby boomers.
And they're sort of cool. I still like them, but they did cost too much when they were new. Okay, number eight, one of my most fun cars I've ever driven, but they just didn't sell, the Chrysler Crossfire. It was like a little SLK that Chrysler badged and put some Chrysler stuff on, but it was basically a little Mercedes. But again, it was totally impractical, and you couldn't see from inside the car. It had the worst visibility of any car I think I've ever driven.
And you and I have never agreed about that, because you've always said it was a cool car, and I was like, eh.
Yeah, well, I think maybe guys cool. liked it. Guys liked it, gals didn't. I don't know.
I can see where David's coming from here, because just looking at the pictures,
it's cool.
Looks like a pretty cool car.
All right, number seven. Now, this one I actually like, but I do agree that it's totally impractical. The Chevrolet SSR. They sold 23,000 of these cars between 2003 and 2008. That's roughly 4,500 cars a year. Again, you can't keep making a car that you do that. And they started off with a small V8. They ended up putting a Corvette engine in them.
Yeah.
It's a convertible pickup truck is what it was.
Bullet.
Except it had a hard top on the bed that only lifted up enough that you could stick maybe a bedroll through there or something. It didn't come off.
It didn't lift way up.
So it was totally impractical.
It's a new-looking car with like what seems like an old-style body.
Retro.
Yep.
It's intriguing. I'd have walked by this one, and I'd have test drove it, and then I wouldn't have got it.
Okay.
Right. Is it a truck? Is it a roadster?
Yeah.
What is it? Is it a moonmobile?
It was cool. I drove one. One time I drove one over a weekend. I liked it. It was cool. But it totally impractical.
Hey, when we finish this, let's add at least three things that we think are not a fail.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
We'll stay tuned.
Number six, the Lexus HS 250H. Now, this is another one of those really great thinking, they thought it was a great idea, but the reality is a hybrid Lexus doesn't save you. I mean, if you can afford the Lexus, you're probably not worried about how much gas you're using. And the hybrid costs a lot more, so they ended up selling 5,218 a year of these between 2009 and 2012. Not enough to keep building. Cadillac XLR. Now, that was one of those super stylish, super everything.
Supercar,
but they sold an average of 1,662 of these a year between 2003 and 2011. The Acura ZDX. They lost me on this one. What was that?
That's like the Honda
Insight?
The Honda Accord that they kind of made into the hatchback wagon and right now. Cross Tour?
Oh, it's the Cross Tour.
It's the Acura Cross Tour.
Yeah, they sold 1,457 of them a year, so nope. 1,457 a year. Okay, moving right along.
Yeah, it's not good when you're only selling about 100 a month.
Across the country. Now we go right way down in the production numbers. The Lexus LS 600 HL, the long version of the 600 hybrid. Again, you start off with a $60,000 car base. You add 30 because it's a hybrid. Now you've got a $90,000 car. They managed to sell 256 a month of these cars across the country.
Well, no, 256 a month or a year?
A year. 256 a year.
2,000 since October 2007.
Yeah.
With that extra $30,000 price tag for the hybrid premium, it would take you 109 years to recoup the costs in fuel savings at a $4 gallon average driving 15,000 miles a year. It's ridiculous.
It only takes 109 years to catch up? I'm in. Okay, here we go.
Car won't even last that long.
Number two car, the Mitsubishi IMEV. You won't last that long, 109 years. The Mitsubishi IMEV, they've sold 1,420 of them across the country since 2011. That's 355 a year. That's an electric car, folks.
This is the most unattractive car you've ever made me look at, Dan.
It is, yeah. I have a friend that owns one, by the way.
I'm sorry to your friend. Your friend's car is awesome. But the ones I'm looking at on the screen aren't quite as appealing.
The number one mistake that's been made in the last decade in the car business, the Nissan Murano Cross Cabriolet. It's a Murano convertible.
When they first came out, I did that. What? It's too flat with that, tell him why.
Well, because the belt line on the car is up around your shoulders.
Well,
so when the top is down, your head sticks out above the doors, basically.
Barely.
It's funny. It's a convertible CUV, basically, is what it is.
And it's such a, it's got all this flex in it because of the lack of a roof. It allows the entire body to flex like a Tacoma Narrows Bridge whenever it goes. So it doesn't feel that safe. It's not a, I mean, I think it's pretty cool because it made me think of the Volkswagen Thing from back in the day. You know, a little convertible SUV. No.
Looked like an overfed juke to me.
Fail. So let me give you a couple of my opinions about some definite successes. The Mini Cooper, for sure. Those cars are so fun to drive. They are very reasonably priced. I'm not going to say they're the most reliable vehicle in the world. They are, because I talk to BMW drivers, and they do like to lease because they don't want to pay for the repairs once they're out of that factory warranty. But the being 4 years, 50,000 miles bumper to bumper is great. And then with BMW, they include the maintenance. And on the Mini Coopers, it's just a good price. It's the right price for a lot of, you get a lot of bang for the buck, and they hold their value extremely well. And that race car driver that we had on our show years ago, or
Hinchcliffe,
maybe just a couple years ago, we asked him, so what do you drive when you're not on the track? A Mini Cooper. He said it's the most fun.
And he said your buddies don't ask you to help them move.
Oh, no, you can't put anything in a Mini Cooper.
That's it.
You can barely get a second person in there.
It was Hinchcliffe.
I think.
Grand Prix driver. Yeah.
Yeah. So, or NASCAR. No, okay, one or the other. We don't know.
Don't look to me for your NASCAR
expertise. Use Google.
Rodas isn't here right now.
Another win, and this has been since the 40s when they came out with it, is the Jeep Wrangler, which we talked about earlier. It's a total win.
My
it's
dream
never
car.
Been a bad. It's never been a bad idea.
No, it's a great car.
What's your favorite car ever? The favorite car you've ever driven?
Porsche 911.
That's a really nice car.
Carrera 4.
Well, I just got to.
You guys
it
have Carrera
4.
Mine's like a 94 Dodge Dakota was my favorite car. It really was my favorite car ever.
Oh,
truck.
You meant my own car,
yeah,
not a car
you've driven.
I've driven. I've driven a lot of cars.
Yeah, that's a good point. Car that's been yours, I guess, would be the right way to fix
it. Well,
it
wasn't
especially
the Pinto
for someone
Station
like you
wagon.
Who's been in every possible car.
Right? It was not the Pinto Station Wagon. You know what I really, 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 really love?
Really?
Really, 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 really. I love the Lexus GS. That is a sports sedan that has enough room for all your friends and all your shopping bags, and it will go, and it will corner, and it's sexy. I like the Lexus GS.
What about you, David?
Yeah, I like the car I'm driving right now. It's an F-Sport Lexus LS. It's
really?
The LS F-Sport, yeah. It's fast. It's very comfortable. It's very quiet. They never break. That's why I drive them. They never, ever break.
No, they don't.
So, okay, so Autoflex Leasing fan texture rolling in. Sybil sounds like dingus this morning. Yes, you're right. In addition, anyone not born before 82 or 81 at the very least is a Gen X. Okay, I'll go along with that. This is all very interesting, but when are we going to sign Rice? Does never work for you? How does never work?
Never.
Would you want to lease a Wrangler if you wanted to modify it and take it trail riding?
Can you modify a lease vehicle?
You can, but here's the thing. If you do things that enhance its resale value, that's cool. Everybody's going to love that because when you turn it back in, the bank's going to get more money for it. But if you do things that limit the number of buyers that might want it or hurt the value of the car, you've got to change it back before you turn it in.
But when it comes to a Jeep Wrangler, I'll tell you this. If you want to do whatever, we're probably going to just trade you out of that lease anyway instead of return it because it will hold its value pretty well. If you add a bunch of goodies to it, it will still have a draw because that's the kind of vehicle that can handle that. Not every truck is going to be wanted used once you've jacked it up and done all these things to it. But a Wrangler, it's a totally different animal.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't stop thinking about a Jeep Wrangler right now.
Oh, he can't be still in his seat. I think somebody's going to Autoflex.
He's jonesing for a Wrangler.
For me to replace the Dodge Dakota to be my favorite car ever, I think that's the only thing that I could get to become that car. Because I'm not in the, I guess, salary bracket to go Porsche 911 like Tammy's driven before. I know. I'm just saying you've driven one.
I got to drive it.
And
that'd
be a dream. But a realistic dream is a Jeep Wrangler for me. For whatever reason, I just have always been very intrigued by those cars.
I'm going to tell you why. When you see them, they look like fun. Because usually the top's down, whoever's in it, they look like they're in a carefree mode, right? That's
exactly
why.
What it is.
Just like a convertible. It's carefree. It's fun. And it is, too. And you know what? The smoother riding Jeep Wrangler would probably be the unlimited, the four-door version, the longer one. And if you have a family, You could get everybody in that one pretty comfortably and put a few things in the very back.
And don't forget, reach out to Tammy, David, Autoflex Leasing, 817 or 972-234-1234. We're going to go through some car insurance myths and human trafficking. That's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Next on the Saturday Morning Test Drive, 105.3 The Fan.
This is the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by Autoflex Leasing.
Saturday Morning Test Drive, I'm Mike Bingus, joined by David Blasingame and Tammy Pickard, and we are joined right now by the man who will be making his return to Twitter this afternoon, at Mr. Fourth and Long, the great Jesse Holly. And Jesse, you're unaware of this, but that mic is having issues right now, so you get to switch over to this one right here. And then you'll be all good. Good morning, Jesse Holly.
Good morning. How's everybody doing today?
We're doing great. Awesome. They gave me David, first off, is like the most prepared person in the history of radio. 36 pages of prep and stuff like that. And I went through it and I was ready to go. And I was like, it was like doing a show with Mike Fisher. Mike Fisher will send you just hundreds of pages of stuff to go through if you do a show with Fisher. If you ever have the chance to do a show with Fisher, do it, because he'll write out everything. And David's very similar to that, but he wrote out the coolest tease ever. It said, human trafficking. That's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. And before we get to mixing with Jesse Holly, I've got to find out where that tease came from.
Okay, so, you know, people investigate everything these days, and they investigated where Subaru got all their components, their engines, their window motors, their seats, their dashboards, and they found out that a lot of the components of Subaru are made by other companies. Subaru buys the parts, and these other companies use illegal immigrants. They house them in company housing. They pay them one third what they would normally pay a worker to work on a Subaru. And if the guys get hurt, like on the assembly line, you get your finger cut off or whatever, they fire you and deport you.
Wow.
Yeah. Who knew? I mean, Subaru's supposed to be the human, you know, we love, and they've got the greatest commercials in the world. Their dog approved commercial, I love that.
They bark at the mail truck
and stuff. But the reality is they're buying a lot of parts from people that are basically using indentured servants to make those parts. The story is long and very entailed. I won't go through the entire thing, but the reality is they're buying parts from guys that are using indentured servants. They're not paying these guys. They're in whatever country they're in illegally. A lot of them come from Bangladesh. Some of them come from Cambodia. And they're trying to get out of the country they're in and into a better place, so they go to Japan. But then once they get there, they don't get treated like everyone else.
But they've also contracted with these brokers that get them there, and then they can't get out of that contract. And it's terrible. So we need to push back on that.
I didn't have a hot Subaru opinion heading into this story, but I don't know what I think about Subaru anymore. If I was ever going to get a Subaru, I think that might have changed at this point.
It certainly changed my opinion, and I don't know how many other manufacturers are buying parts from places like this, but I don't want to drive a car that I know that somebody that was basically a slave had to build the car. You know, or we're used to build the car. I'm out.
So they may build great cars, but this part was kind of a bummer. So.
Yeah, that's it. That is sad, man, to know that.
It's like you and your Nikes. Do you feel okay knowing that a bunch of kids made those Nikes?
Oh, killing me.
Sorry. I have on Adidas today.
Guess he's wearing those shoes where like it form fits your toes and everything. It's so awkward looking.
Yeah, really
let me show you. They have toes in them.
Yeah,
they're the toe shoes. Those have been around for a long time.
I know. It's form fitting and it's awkward to me. I don't get it.
I think any of those American Ninja Warriors might be wearing those things when they run those tracks, because they need that good traction on those.
But Jesse can't do that stuff.
I bet he could.
Well, you're overestimating Jesse Holly, right?
I could get farther at Ninja Warrior than you could.
Oh.
If we did the same course in Ninja Warrior, I would get further than you.
Do you know what it hurts you, though?
I think
you're a big guy.
There it is.
You're a big guy. Big guys, it's all upper body strength and arm strength. And they wear guns.
Don't be bringing guns in the studio.
Keep the guns downstairs in the car. You can't bring them in the studio. But these guns, I see you, Tay. You got the guns out. Sun's out, guns out.
But here's the deal. Those guys, their hands wear out because they've got them doing so many of those little grip things. that body weight, the guys that actually do the best, weigh 140 pounds.
Well, I don't quite weigh 140. I'm more like 180. But I do. I accept your American Ninja Challenge.
All right.
I don't know how we would ever do that, though. If anybody's out there listening,
there's courses.
And
there's
they have
like
an American Ninja course.
My sister does. Like, she goes someplace and does it in Dallas. Like, she seriously
really?
Wants to do it.
There are. There
I hope
are
she's
gyms.
Not listening, because my sister has no chance of ever pulling this off.
Oh.
She's just not. She's not athletic. She's not athletic. She's like.
But she has desire.
She's like. She's motion stiff. Like, she's just not. She's not like. Flexible
fluid.
Enough.
Not
yeah,
fluid and flexible.
Exactly what it is.
Yeah.
She won't be able to pull it off. I think I could do. When I watch American Ninja Warrior, first off, I've smoked since I was 21, and that's a bad, bad thing, and that is that would hurt me significantly. But outside of that, I think I could do just about everything, except for the part where they always have to fall down and land on this perfect spot on a trampoline and then shoot off.
Yes.
That one seems like the one that would always kill me. Like, the monkey bars won't kill me. Like, the jumping and catching myself, pulling myself up, like that kind of stuff. I got good balance. But the trampoline part, because I got a torn ACL and a partially torn MCL in my right leg, that one might mess me up. But
you
other than that, Jesse,
sideways.
I got you.
Oh.
Well, but here's the deal.
I want to be
I'm
there.
In.
And
I want to see
Jesse,
that. When
yes.
you guys, you know, they'll be probably back in Dallas next year to do tryouts, which is coming up, in fact, in the next couple of months, I would think.
Never mind. I didn't
They'll
realize
be back
I had to
in Dallas to do,
so
to do tryouts. And so we would, Autoflex would sponsor you guys to
oh,
go,
I love it.
To go
love
try
it.
Out for American Ninja Warrior.
I don't
want to
try out. I don't
want
to try with other people. I want to just go and like, I want to go pre tryouts. Like,
let's just
as
go to that
as they're setting up. Can we just do a quick run through the sea? Because I don't want the other guys to be there, because then my competitive spirit gets going, and then I'll be trying to do something.
So for a quick summary here, what we're saying is, Mike says he can beat Jesse.
What's up?
Mike has a torn ACL. He smoked since he's 21, and he can beat a former athlete in something athletic.
I was a former athlete.
That's what just happened.
I played three sports in high school. I wasn't like I was nothing.
I said a professional athlete.
I wasn't the superstar, like the greatest superstar ever in the history of Roselle High, like Jesse Holly was. But I was a solid athlete.
So he's a professional athlete. You're a professional smoker.
This is
not a, and don't forget,
I'm not getting paid to do it.
Get him, JP.
And David has volunteered to pay to see it.
Yes.
He'll sponsor
yes.
it to
I love
see it.
It.
So out of all the Autoflex Leasing fan texters, who can tell us where a gym is that has the American Ninja Warrior kind of a setup, one of those obstacle courses, because we're going.
I'll reach out to my sister. If she was listening, she's probably already cussed me out on a text on my phone already.
You're no longer her brother. I mean, you're off the family deal.
Well, that's
completely.
On her. I feel that way about it.
All right, we probably don't have time to do a whole lot more, I guess.
Well, do you want to?
Okay,
it's your time.
Well, real quickly,
what you want to do,
this
David.
Is something that a lot of people ask all the time: should I buy my used car at the end of the lease? And here's the thing: it's really simple to figure out how much is the car worth, and how much is it going to cost you to buy the car. And that is where the really big variable comes in, because some cars have lower payments because the buyout is so terribly high. If you get one of those cars that has really low payments but the buyout is terribly high, then you shouldn't buy the car, because it's going to be way more than the car is worth. The other thing is, you can't get out of that lease like ever. You're just in till the end, no matter what. So if you have an extra kiddo, then you just got to put them in the trunk or something.
No,
but
not at all.
It's really pretty simple to figure out what's your car actually worth. You can go to Black Book. You can go online and see what cars are worth wholesale, because that's what your car's worth, and then what is the payoff that the lender wants, because you're dealing with a bank at the end. What is the payoff that the lender wants? And then if it makes sense to buy it, buy it. And if you know the car, if you've driven it the whole time and you really like the car, that's something to be considered.
Emotional attachment's
well,
big.
Yeah,
that, emotional attachment's
really
huge.
Is.
Yeah.
I love my car.
If that purchase price or residual value is within $500 of the true market value, then yes, it's a deal.
Yeah.
But if you start getting a big, like if the car's only worth 15, but the payoff is 18, bye-bye. Go find another car. We'll hook you up. We'll find you one.
Yeah. The other thing is you can actually buy your car out of the lease and then turn around and trade it in and use it to save tax money on your next car.
Help our clients figure that out, because when they get to the end of the lease, if there's a little equity, we're going to do the trade-in. If there's not, we...
That's awesome, because I'm standing here and I'm confused. And so I would need to like sit down with someone and say, all right, explain it to me one more time. All right, now
we'll make a picture.
We'll put it on paper.
Yeah, oh,
we'll put it on paper for you.
You want to get help, Jesse Holly? You call 817 or 972 2341 234.
They are the good guys.
Somebody texted in and said, Dingus would look like Vince Vaughn in Old School doing the rings
scene?
While smoking a cigarette.
Yeah. Still holding. Still holding. And the other one, AutoFX Lucy fan text from the 956, Jeep Wranglers are for girls.
No.
And this girl wants one.
Right.
That's not a problem at all. Jesse, what's coming up on the show?
Oh, man, we got Rangers talk. Of course, we got Cowboys talk. Their first preseason game is in the books. Five guys that I thought stood out in the first preseason game. We got to go, too. That's a good one that we have. Gots to go. Well, I have some categories that we got to go. So we'll see it because you guys got to go.
For we
David,
do.
For Tammy, for Snuggles, I'm Mike. Mike and Jesse, myself, and Jesse Holly next on 105.3 The Fan.